So it's not always the CIO who is the most guilty.
True. And it
It can
seems
be
like
lack of
people.
investment or
And it's
Well, why don't
usually
we
why
people that,
don't we
you know,
get
they're the
back?
weakest link. Go
I mean,
ahead.
let me get back to the structure and we'll go through the different groups. But I want to introduce the case writer and expert in this area. His name is John Mumford. John is the president and founder and chief risk officer for the Fellsway Group. The mission is to help companies build resilience in a digital world. And I hope that John explains what he means by that. John's professional history includes directing global information security for one of our clients, which is a Fortune 100 financial services company. So, welcome, John, to seat at the table. Now, what we're going to do is our usual routine. We are now recording, so please just be careful what you say. And we're going around the different rooms. And the first team was Frumi, John, Rudy, Steve, and Suzanne. Do you have a spokesperson?
Yeah, Larry, it's Steve.
Okay, Steve.
All right, great. So the way we started off this case was that we came up with decided on some assumptions here, and basically what we said for this case, we made the assumption that the backup could not be used that we had, but that wasn't an option to go in and.
Wait, hold on, Steve. Would you all mute yourselves?
Okay. So the backup that was in place, the data backup, that couldn't be applied. That wasn't an option. We have the case mentioned that vital patient records. We took that. We made that an assumption that lives are at risk here. It could be 2 hours, 3 hours, and patients could die from this situation. So timing was vital. That there was procedures need to be followed. There was some documentation, but not strong documentation for procedures. Insurance, we made the assumption that definitely like most companies now have cybersecurity insurance. So we do have some coverage there. We just not really weren't sure about maybe that coverage wasn't significant enough, so we made that assumption. This is a hospital situation, so HR needs to get involved with this situation, and this is a PR nightmare. I mean, we can't, we got to control the data. How this information is disclosed. And then again, the HIPAA requirements, over so many records you need to report on, disclose this information. We're making the assumption that this went over so many records, that requirement for disclosing information. So that was a summary of the assumptions that we made to work through this case. The first step was informing the CEO that we need to make a decision here. We need to act here and come up with a solution. So the CEO has one view of this, of going in and making the payment. We're saying, hold off, don't make that payment right now. Let's understand the situation. Let's get the information controlled within the organization. So the first step would be to call to go into the war room and start the process of notifications. And that could be the notifications to all the employees, well, basically the higher level, and making sure that the employees are not leaking information, that they have cell phones now. They're not going to go out and start saying, hey, we've got a ransom attack here, and nothing goes out of the hospital. So it's got to be a lockdown of information that has to be followed. And then at that point, whoever is involved in managing this crisis, we have to have that chief person involved. So we put together all our ideas, and then that person's going to execute the process. So that would be a number of different steps that would take place. But the first thing, making sure the doctors are informed, making sure IT is involved in this war room, making sure the employees are notified about what's going on. Those would be some of the priorities. Basically, like a hush order to all the employees. Hospitals have codes, code red, code blue. There must be a code out there that they use for everyone to just to, if a situation like this happens, that they implement that code system. At this point, once we have all that information controlled, then we start thinking about, okay, do we pay that ransom? And that was an issue sort of some of us weren't really sure about, but the main thing was our individuals, our patients' lives at risk here. That was the main driver. behind this. It's very possible we might have to make that payment, depending if we have lives at risk here. So that's basically the summary of what we came up with. If the team wants to add any more details.
Thank you, Steve. That was very, very thorough. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next group is Daryl, Craig, Mark, Marianne, and Robert. You have a team spokesperson?
Yes, it's me, Daryl.
Okay.
If I freeze up, I'll shut my video off. Okay, it's been a little thin bandwidth here. So we talked a lot about the ransomware factor and what that meant and what we felt the priority of the problems were. There was discussion about the fact that at first, the first instinct of the CEO was to cover it up and to try to keep it quiet was a little bit disconcerting for us. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later. But the fact that the security of the data and the risk of exposure of that data was pretty big, and that was a grave concern. We also talked about the likelihood of getting the data back if you paid the money was not as high as people think it is. You know, it could be somewhere around 50% chance that you'll actually get your data back, and even less that you'll actually be able to use that to quickly restore. It's usually not as simple as that, and the data is often corrupted. So putting it back together again would require outside assistance. We talked a lot about the fact that it was clear that if they had a plan, they weren't executing against that plan and something went wrong. We had Marianne on our team. So we, as she sits on hospital board or boards, she kind of confirmed the fact that they probably didn't have the bandwidth and financial backing to be able to do some of the things that probably were necessary to prevent this situation. So let's not overestimate the capability that they may have had with talent or with preparedness. They probably had something, but it really might not have been what we would expect to see perhaps in our corporate backgrounds. It was clear that if they did have a plan, they didn't practice it. There was nothing in here about the PR. So we're kind of in agreement with the first team that we need to get this under control very quickly. We need to be in lockstep with the message that goes out to the public. We want to provide quick, but I guess calming information. We have this under control. We have a plan. This is under control, and we're taking these steps. But we don't want to be too specific because we're just, you know, giving information to people who are waiting for us to pay or not pay the ransom. So we don't want to be too explicit about what we're doing. We do have a duty probably to disclose, but best case, the best would be to contact the insurance company because they're pretty comfortable in this space and knowing teams or can provide referrals to teams that can help us get data restoration and provide the extra PR assistance perhaps, and also the technical assistance to be able to get our systems back in line. I did bring up that getting things back up and running is questionable. We're probably dealing with manual systems now. So while you might be able to get your data restored, we're going to have big problems associated with now assimilating that now accumulating manual data and getting that back in to now bring things back up to speed. So they're in for a really rough ride on this. The insurance company, they probably do have insurance, we would assume. But one of the things that I pointed out is that is the first thing that the cyber criminals do is go look for the limits on your insurance, and they make sure that their demand is not exceeding the amount of insurance that you have. Nice of them, isn't it? Let's see. We talked about HIPAA and the duty to disclose. Marianne felt that there was a mandatory duty to disclose. And let's see, we need a very well presented PR message, similar to what the first team said. We have and we want to communicate that we have a plan, we're taking action, and then internally, with our security team, what's left of them, right? And the board, we want to go through what are the systems that we're bringing up, what exactly is our plan, who are the players, let's you know, this is a 24/7 effort in order to get this back up and running again. Putting Humpty Dumpty back together again is what I said that this is.
Thank you very much, Daryl. The next
group... there was one more thing I forgot. We did call to question the judgment, perhaps, and preparedness of the CEO who would make a call to keep this quiet.
Okay. Our next group is Brandon, Brian, Ingrid, Larry, and Stephen.
So I've been nominated for the spokesman for this group. The first thing that I would do is we would fire the CSO, have him escorted out of the building. He may be in on it. He should have seen this coming. Ransomware attacks are, you know, some of the easiest to prevent because you back up your data. You have it backed up at multiple data centers. I mean, if that weren't possible, iCloud and cloud providers wouldn't be able to operate, you know? So this is avoidable. It should have been avoided. But let's say that it happened. So the first thing you do is you initiate your incident response team, which is an internal team. You get a computer emergency response team from the outside to come in and start the process of getting your data back. You got to pay the ransom because it's EPHI. And so you've got to figure out what happened. So you need your logs to know whether they stole the data or whether it was stayed on your systems. If it stayed on your systems and was just encrypted, it's not necessarily reportable as a breach to HHS, Office part of HHS. You have to report it to any breach of PHI has to be reported to HHS. But you have to do an investigation in order to determine that. At the same time, you call your counsel, you call in the PR people or an outside firm, preferably both. And it's all hands on deck, exactly like Daryl said. And it's a 24/7 effort until you get the data back and you determine the extent of the breach. Then, of course, you collect on your insurance and you do the investigation, you do an assessment of your systems, and you make sure this never, ever happens again. You do have to inform any individuals whose data has been compromised. So you send out those letters that you get, that say there was a breach some time ago, and, you know, your data may have been compromised or so forth. I'm sure everyone's gotten them from AT&T or something. So that's the process. And, as far as, the CEO wanting to keep it quiet, that's ridiculous. I mean, you're not going to necessarily even be able to do that. And if you were, you're breaking regulations, you're doing all sorts of things that are unethical. So did I get everything?
Yeah, Brian, the only add I would give to you, Brandon, would be also you want to disclose because of your supply chain. You may be a part of one other organization's supply chain, or they may be a part of yours. And so it may get disclosed if you chose to keep it a secret. And that would be a worse situation for your PR firm to have to manage, as well as building the trust that could be irrevocably broken with your community. So that was the only add.
Good. Our next group is Juliet, Cam, Scott, and Vera.
Great. Thanks, Larry. I've been nominated to talk for the group. And pardon me, this is my first time through, so I'll do my best to fit the structure here. Our group was very Strong reactions to the question of transparency. Well, and even before I get to that, we immediately felt, there needs to be an incident response team. If they didn't have one, they need to put one together immediately. That's got to have all the right participants from HR, legal, PR, executive, the CISO, and CFO. You got to have a controlling group to navigate through this very difficult time. And with respect to transparency, we really believe that you got to be open with the community. You're a community hospital. It's very important, for fundraising and building trust and or rebuilding trust. No matter what, you've got a problem, and you're only going to get there if you can be transparent with folks. And you got to, have an appropriate PR campaign that is occurring in parallel with all the technology work that you got to do to try to recover and be able to move forward. Notwithstanding the dearth of, specificity on whether or not you could recover, we felt that you don't want to pay the ransom. You want to try to do all that you can to delay their, anything final with respect to that, and do all that you can to try to recover the information. You got to find out how deep the hole is, and make sure it's shut off before you try to do the recovery in that process. With respect to the concept, there was a question on whether, a cybersecurity, whether it should remain in the cybersecurity oversight committee, from a broader board structure perspective, cybersecurity oversight versus audit committee. We also felt very strongly the audit committee should do the audit stuff, but whether you call it a cybersecurity oversight committee, it should control the technology and the data side. So that's a very important piece that is really not in the purview of the audit committee directly. So we further felt that enlarging the scope of this committee from specifically being cybersecurity to be really more broadly a technology oversight, because when you think of all the AI and other enhanced technologies coming through, there's going to be data and access control and other information that you're going to want to be able to manage properly that way. With respect to, how do you go forward from here in terms of future incident prevention, we felt that there's really a incident response plan that doesn't seem to have, at least there was no information presented in the case. So we'd suggest having a formal incident response plan, which this incident response team can help put into place, where there's buckets of preparation and planning, of which the core element there is training, training, and training for people, along with all the right tools and security precautions. But training is number one in that category, along with the rest of the buckets in an incident response process. And I think that covered it. Anything else from the group? If not, that's what we got for you, Larry.
Thank you very much.
Barry, you're muted.
No, I'm not now. Last group is Amita, Barry, John, and Martha.
So I've been asked to present the group's discussion or the key points. So while we felt that certainly the hospital was caught flat-footed in this case, but it is really important to not go it alone going forward. And while transparency is important, we need to make sure that they are contacting their key advisors when it comes to their corporate counsel, the FBI, The cyber insurance company, who might be, as somebody else mentioned as well, a source of referrals for others. And also to just understand what are the limits, what would they do in this case? A cybersecurity expert as such, as well as a crisis management expert, differentiating it from PR in general, because there are folks who specialize exactly in this kind of situation. If there's a crisis, how do you go about handling? Because in everything, communication is absolutely key. You know, what the message should be, for example, the FBI may say, or, you know, you give this guidance, we want you to say only X and not go into details about things. So just making sure everyone's in sync on that. And then when it comes to the community, there's also the community of other hospitals. John and our group talked about how Johns Hopkins, large Johns Hopkins, has been faced with a situation like this. So it might be useful to talk to other hospital CEOs, if unfortunately, or even health plan. We know locally, for example, Harvard Pilgrim had something come up. I'm not sure if it was ransomware or not, but there was an attack of some kind. And talking to those CEOs, or maybe even CEOs of other companies, to see how they may have handled it, to be a little bit more informed in this process. And of course, realizing, as somebody said before, it is very important in this case, because it's a hospital, that's people's health, people's lives, which are at stake versus other organizations. But just making sure, nevertheless, that if you do things like paying ransom, how do you even account for that? How does the board handle that? Who would negotiate that? Would it be your corporate counsel or not? There would be other issues, but it's really important to get this core group of people thinking about it and working off that. We're not sure if there was a formal crisis plan or not, but in essence, getting this group together, we are crafting one quickly to be able to deal with this issue. Did I miss anything, guys?
Thank you very much, Mita. Appreciate it. So now I'm going to turn this to John Mumford. I want to thank you for your creativity. Obviously something like this could never happen in the real world. So John, take it from here.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Larry, and great job by everybody here. I felt that the 35 minutes made you feel that this was more of a simulation, as if it were really happening to you, because you felt the pressure. I better make some decisions before I get back to the Larry call. And that's what it's like. When you're in chaos, time is against you. Your most powerful tool is communications. And if you don't have this pre-scripted, I'll call it, whether it's IR plans or communication plans or crisis, you're toast. And now, if you don't name your crisis or incident commander, whatever you want to call it, everybody's got a great idea. What are you implementing? Who's making the decision? Who's making the call? So chaos plays a funny role. It puts in people in stressful positions. So hopefully the 35 minutes helped you simulate that through this scenario. So I appreciate the opportunity to share. Fellsway Group, when you mentioned it, Larry, we talk about resilience management for reasons of this. If we called ourselves cybersecurity consultants, everybody on this call would put us in a box and think of firewalls and encryption and passwords. And what we believe is cyber risk is a business risk. Because in a digital world, everything you do is digital. Therefore, a cyber event could impact that digital world. So you have to think more broadly about your crisis management plans. This cyber event is no different than if that hospital had an elongated power outage, right? So if you don't have a crisis communication or crisis management plan that is holistic, that's a problem as well. So resilience to me means I am up for business for my customers tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And how do I create resilience? There's proactive and reactive ways to do that. And in the reactive world, if your response management capabilities are flawed or your recovery management capabilities are flawed, then you're not resilient. So that's a little definition behind there. Next thing I wanted to do is share. There is a difference here. What you guys were dealt with is things got through the environment where it was escalated to you as an incident. And I wanted to help define the difference between a problem, an event, and an incident. Because you can't cry wolf also. You can't engage this group on every time things go bump in the night. And we spend a lot of time, and I hope you're okay that I'm educating you a little bit. Everybody walks in the door, expects everything to be, you know, your flux capacitor should be fluxing. But inevitably, something goes wrong and you call in a problem. You got to be good at problem management first, because problem management is the precursor to if I can't solve the problem, maybe there's some anomaly in my environment that I escalate for another group to tackle. We'll call that an event. I can't just reset their password and they're good. So if your problem management process is good, then you should have an escalation to a cyber event handling group. The cyber event handling groups, their number one objective is, have I properly identified the scope of the event, and can I contain it, and can I eradicate it? If I cannot, I then escalate again to this crisis or incident response group. Now it's an incident. Data left the building. My analogy is, you're in a building and you smell smoke. That's a problem. It could become an event, but maybe we could contain that event and the fire is only in a closet. Different than if you pulled up to the building and it was already on fire. You know not to go in. That's a ransom attack. It's already past all your traps. It jumped, it leapfrogged all the way past you're dealing with it and you're scrambling. Okay, so the most powerful tool you'll have is communications. And part of that communications is, how good is our response practice? You have to have cyber event handling runbooks. You have to have incident response playbooks. You have to know, should I activate DR? Your DR plan could overlay the problem. And now you lose all of that historical data that you need to understand how the problem got started in the first place. So there's a lot of problems here technically that I won't go into. What I will congratulate everybody on is, you all highlighted at the moment of the need that you got to get an expert group together to grapple with this. PR, crisis, forensics. Let me tell you how this would actually unfold. And forget about the CEO's decision. This is how it should unfold if you have the assumption of, I have incredibly good backups and copies air-gapped off the network. One of the things everybody did not mention was, we were all talking about the problem and trying to solve the problem and communicating. No one mentioned out-of-band communications. What if our network is down? How are we talking to each other? How are we keeping our decisions away from the bad actor who may still be in our network? Because we're all on the same Zoom call that our network is on. So anyway, put that up. You have beautiful pre-tested communications backups, and you have air backups, because you may have backed up the ransomware. Okay, so you need an air gap backup too. Let's say you have all this stuff in place and you have cyber insurance. The first thing you should have considered was activate cyber insurance. It's not a case where you're still trying to figure it out. You know you've been ransomed. Period. Done. Call cyber insurance. Why? I'll give you the primary reason why. In order for you, if you had all the beautiful things in place, in order for you to recover, forget about communications or any of that for a minute. You have a resource constraint. And you got to divide and conquer. If your IT people and your security people are all working the problem, who's bringing up Humpty Dumpty? Who's bringing up that parallel universe? So by activating cyber insurance, let's hold off, will they pay the ransom or not? They are arms and legs to get into your environment to do the forensics, determine root cause, right? Contain it further than maybe your tooling could have contained it, and negotiate with the ransom person. They have a ransom negotiator, get all the legal stuff. So that let cyber insurance playbook run that side. Let your people build up the parallel universe in at the same time so that you could get up and running sooner. If all the same people are focused on the problem, no one's bringing up parallel universe. So I'll just stop there and let you guys react to that first. And that's what I mean by resilience.
I had a question about the core in the case is the CEO recommends paying the ransom. And as we went around the room, some of the groups said, no way do you pay the ransom. Some groups said, yeah, well, you know, we'll get the general counsel to deal with it. What's your opinion, again, in this particular issue where we got a community hospital?
I love that piece of the problem. And I think it was Daryl who mentioned a very critical piece, which is I know our number one risk is to health and human safety, right? That's our number one risk. But we cannot guarantee by getting that data back, it's going to be pristine. It could be corrupted. It could only be 50%. And that's the actual stat. Is you only get 50 to 60% of the data back anyway. So it's not a fail-safe decision. You better have had a reserve in cryptocurrency to be able to pay it in the first place. And there's no guarantee that the bad actor is going to be a trustworthy source. So you could have just pissed away money, wasted money, excuse my language, but you could have wasted money and got really nothing out of it. And now you've got two problems. You paid money and you still lost human life. And you're no further along. I like to start with the mantra. Our mantra is we'll never pay the ransom and move from there. And what are all the decisions and things I got to do with that in mind? The second thing is, and someone, I think it was it was Suzanne, or actually it was Fermi, said, you better crack open that cyber insurance policy and see what is, you know, you're able to execute. Here's what I have found. And I think Daryl also mentioned the FBI. The FBI is going to do an inspection of the ransom attacker. And they're going to go, oh, they're on a sanction list and they're tied to a Russian gang. And if you pay it, that's on you. Another PR problem. Cyber insurance is already going to say, I'm telling you up front, we will not reimburse you and get involved in that. So paying the ransom is a really bad thing. The third thing is, now it's out there. Community hospital pays the ransom. I'm going to sell my kit of how I attacked you to another gang. And someone's going to, you know, try it again because you're willing to pay. So,
and John, one of the things that I was thinking is that they know that you had a weak and vulnerability point, and they know that you don't have the money now to institute a really good new plan and put your posture in place and build your run books and your playbooks. So they know that they're going to do it again, not because they know that they can. And not the paying is not the point. The point is that they can get in and then they'll go after your data and they'll do other things for it. And maybe just for the heck of it.
But aren't actual information around your health, isn't that a prized product in the dark web? From what I understand, that's much more valuable than your typical social security number. There's like a whole lot next to it. So it's a double sell. It's, hey, I'm getting ransomware from you. And let me figure out if I can do it again. And can I sell the stuff that I already have? If it left the building per Brandon's thing, if it was stolen, then I can resell that several times over.
It's a much more valuable commodity than our social security numbers that have been out on the dark web for ages right now.
Yeah, about 50 dollars. And then, but if it's somebody, a recognizable name, so it's some celeb or some
executive. You know, Barack Obama has mental health, you know, and I've got that data now.
Yeah,
I'm just making that up. I'm not making a political statement.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's terrible.
Notice I didn't pick a more recent candidate. So paying the ransom is a really, really slippery slope with no potential benefits that we've seen. You know, for people that aren't tied to a gang, you know, some dude in the garage dabbling that is trying to extort you, you might be able to negotiate them down to $1 million and hey, you got lucky and you got all your data back, got lucky. But to the point about they know your vulnerabilities, here's the other ticking time bomb, is if they don't see that you are reporting, get out of healthcare for a second, any industry, especially financial, the bad actors will report for you and say, hey, I hacked them and I haven't seen them report it yet. Now I'm going to demand more on my ransom and I am going to sell this, right? So it's bad out there, guys. It's not fun. So,
John, actually, what happened? Is this your case? Like, did this really happen? And can you tell us what happened?
It's a blend of two cases, two clients. And it's I'll tell one quick story. The one case was oh my gosh, why can't I think of it? A healthcare company that relies on consultants to deliver their services, and
outsourcing company.
Yeah, so they own the data, and it was mental health data, which is the most toxic of the EPHI, right? And they rely on the consultants. The consultants log into their portal to get the information when they're serving their patients, right? And when they were constrained with this issue, they actually were astute enough to prioritize the recovery. So forget about the ransom, because they didn't pay the ransom. They did notify and so on and so forth. They did have good backups. But the recovery part I wanted to share was they knew recovering that database was second, recovering payroll to pay these consultants to provide the services was first. I just thought sharing that, even just understanding the importance of your systems, because other people were talking about you go on pen and paper for a while, and how do you integrate this stuff to put Humpty Dumpty back together if you had to work in manual mode? What would you bring up first? It may not be that system. They need to know they're going to get paid because that's tied to their access to their system and so on. So that's part of what the case came from. And the other was just not one of, it was part my client, the way the CEO was always hot on keeping it quiet and paying ransom. And it nothing had happened truly. But we got him culturally to shift his mindset, to put a policy in place and put more, preventative controls in place. So he wouldn't have to be grappling with that, situation. They didn't actually get ransom and he didn't actually pay. So it was a blend of two things.
Ingrid. John, quick question. So what would happen if you didn't pay that ransom and to that end lives were lost at the hospital because of it? Would the patient's families have the right to, well, I think people have the right to sue no matter what these days, but I'm just trying to understand that would be a part of the cost per se of doing this thing, which you've explained very clearly on the why, but I just was curious as to how that is handled.
That is a nightmare situation. And no PR can recover from that. And no matter who, I think it was Brandon, no matter who you fired, I think trust is out the window. That's a potential game over for that community hospital. So I'm sorry for not giving a clearer answer. I think the more you can be in control of the message and get ahead of the recovery, to ensure that you're managing the risk of human life as a priority, the better off you can. But I'm sure they would find some clever way to explain it had nothing to do with the ransomware and make a doctor a fall person for it, or,
yeah,
you know.
Well, and maybe too, I'm trying to remember my business law, but I think that you're paying a criminal. So yeah. I think it's not like you failed to pay the policeman to guard your parking lot. No, somebody committed a crime against you and you were making a decision as to how to respond to that.
You're on a list now. You are on a list. Barry, you had a question.
Yes. Is there a developing consensus out there of what really happens, what's best practice, and also have there been any court cases where in that sad situation, someone died, many people died, and they didn't do a ransom, and where that was contested, either in terms of civil or in terms of criminal? By now, this is not a new event, ransomware. And this kind of hack attack, what do we know out there? Because I say that because one of the things our group criticized is this company was trying to do it all by themselves and wasn't even looking as to what happened in other places and what the consensus is. Ransomware, no ransomware, FBI sting, no sting, all those kind of things.
All right, John, answer Barry's question, but Barry's question will be the last question so that we can terminate on time. John?
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that, Barry. I have not, so I'm not a healthcare expert. I'm a cyber expert, and we do help healthcare. I have not come across any readings where this scenario that we just described of the ransom impacted loss of life in a healthcare situation. I have not seen that yet. So I don't know what legal readings are out there. There was a second part to your question that I wanted to respond to. I'm sorry for not noting it. You're on mute.
Barry?
Best practice. Consensus is as to best practice and what really happens.
Yeah. So I'll write down best practice real quick. But going back to what I've seen is when hospitals are ransomed, the staff is able to manually manage the best they can because there still are certain written records around. So they're still able to stabilize human safety, right? Save lives without all the technology necessarily, but they can't live in that world very long. But best practice, I think Brandon was saying it's, or someone was saying, maybe it was you, Steve. Practice. The best thing you could do is practice this muscle memory. Put yourself in a situation where you're strained and have a tight timeline and you got to solve the problem, and capture those as lessons learned, enhance the playbooks that you got, practice again, and use real feasible, scenarios versus pie in the sky, because people don't really learn muscle memory from fake scenarios. So I think practicing is the best. Training, practice. Practice doesn't mean make perfect, it makes permanent, right? So practice.
John, I think at this point we'll need to stop it. I want to thank you very much for the case. Thank you very much for your comments. Look forward to seeing you all in July. We will have another case. And meantime, have a great 4th of July. And if you have a mind to watch TV tonight, God help us all.
There's lots on TV tonight.
Thank you.
Great everybody. Everyone.
Thank
great
you. Thank you. Thank happy fourth.
Bye. Happy fourth to everyone.
Great discussion.
Yeah.